Happy Wednesday, technically female tribe. It's Jasmine here yet again for another episode of the Technically Female podcast. Super excited to connect with you guys this week. Today I have a special guest, Donna Peek, who is retired and living her best life. She runs. She's been a part of the high-tech industry for lots of years, and I'm so excited to have her wisdom and her encouragement today. Donna, how are you?
I am fantastic and really excited to chat with you and hopefully share some words of wisdom and encouragement for other women in STEM or technology careers.
Yeah. Definitely. Love the positive vibes. We need more encouragement, I think, more often, almost every day. So exactly. I would love to get to know, like, who are you? What was your STEM journey look like? How did you get to where you are today? Give us kind of some details around that.
Sure. So I was always that kid that loved math and science in school.
Love it.
And I skipped the eighth grade as part of a middle school enrichment program, and I got into a high school that was a specialized math and science high school in Manhattan called Stuyvesant High School. And that experience really changed my life. When it came to picking colleges and a major, it was actually my dad who suggested industrial engineering because I was thinking about majoring in business, but I knew I liked math and science, so I was thinking about engineering, and so he suggested industrial engineering to me, and I was accepted to Columbia and Cornell.
But Lehigh University
In Pennsylvania gave me the most scholarship money. So that was,
yes.
The school that I attended, they were very known and are still very known for their engineering school. And I was recruited by IBM right out of school, and my first job was as a systems engineer, and I rose to the ranks at IBM. I spent my entire career in the high-tech industry, so after IBM, I was there for 12 years, and I worked for some startups for a few years, and then I joined SAS, which is a software company based here in North Carolina. And I was there for 15 years, and then I ended my career for the last 2 years at a company called Gentech, which is a $3 billion technical services firm. And in my career, I specialized in high-tech strategic alliances and partnerships. So that's kind of my STEM journey in a nutshell.
Awesome. That's really cool. I love how you shouted out your dad. I also have a father who pushed me significantly when I was younger to think about STEM, because it's just not something we see too often with women in STEM. And it sounds like your journey in multiple tech, big tech companies, getting engaged in those and really, you know, developing yourself and obviously, you know, getting to the point where you were a valuable candidate for other companies, because you talked about a couple places you moved into. And so now you're retired, right? You're where everyone wants to be.
That's right.
And how are you liking that?
I am loving my retirement. That's a whole other podcast.
Yes, you need all the secrets.
You obviously have to do the right financial planning to be in a position to retire, but I do find that people give the mental and emotional preparation for retirement a short shrift. Mm-hmm. And I actually spent probably the last 10 years really thinking about what I enjoyed and, you know, what brought joy to my life and what are my hobbies and interests and what am I passionate about, and actually started doing those things before I retired so that I built the life for myself before I actually physically retired. So now I'm retired, but I'm just living doing more of the things that I was already doing and adding some new things that I didn't have time to do before.
Yeah. So I think there's a
COVID retirement now, but, you know, because of the travel restrictions. But other than the travel restrictions, I'm doing just about everything else. I play tennis and pickleball, and I run, and I cycle.
You do it all, Donna. You do it all.
I'm living a very active the time.
I think that's important that you called it out, because so often, you know, especially as women and women in STEM and you know, in the African American culture as well, it's like, okay, you got to really, you know, push hard in your academics. You got to really push hard to get the good job and to sustain the good job and to climb the ladder, as they say. But there's not a lot of focus on being aligned to what you're passionate about, putting yourself first where it makes sense, and, you know, leaning into what your interests are and keeping your, you know, mental good and, you know, keeping yourself happy. And so I know you mentioned a little bit about, you know, being a female and a minority in industrial engineering, I'm sure at that time when you were in school, and even now, it's just, there's not a lot. And especially a female and a minority getting in, having the opportunity to even consider an Ivy League university. Like, what did you attribute to your continued success, and how, you know, do you mitigate, you know, that imposter syndrome or that thought of, I'm not good enough, or they'd never select me, or I am not at par with my counterparts?
Well, I think that's why I mentioned that getting into that science and math high school in Manhattan was seminal in my life, changed my life. It was a very competitive environment, and I thrived in that environment. And it built confidence in me, that experience in high school. So by the time I got to Lehigh, which was, you know, a competitive environment on steroids, I was academically prepared, but the challenge for me at Lehigh was the racial environment at Lehigh was very difficult. So you have to think back, I'm much older than you. I graduated college in 1983, so I got to Lehigh in 1979. It's a bit better now. I mean, ironically, I'm talking to some alum, it's not... it's better, but still some of the same racial problems exist at Lehigh. It's in central Pennsylvania, which is a part of Pennsylvania which has a reputation for being like Mississippi. And I experienced everything from being called the N-word on campus, to being assaulted by a student, to encountering the normal prejudices from students and professors. But I did get a top-notch education, and I built analytical thinking skills and a tough skin.
That's important.
In my career, so I never felt like there was something that I couldn't do. I'm a competitive person, and so being in competitive environments just, you know, kicked in those juices. So I would say the only, one of the unique challenges with being both a woman and black in a field like, you know, technology, where there's not a lot of both, is that you're continually being underestimated. But what I learned very early is to how to use that tendency of people to underestimate me to my advantage.
Absolutely.
Because when people underestimate me, I can kind of lay in the cut, and they don't see me coming. And I'm working, you know, studying, building skills, and they're not thinking that I'm a threat until it's too late. And I've surpassed them or delivered results that they can't touch. So I always use what would be a negative and try to figure out, well, how do I can't really do anything about that,
right?
But I can always control how I think about it and what I choose to do about it, and I can also think about ways that I can turn that to my advantage. And also on the imposter thing, one of the things I tell women all the time, because this is a syndrome that women experience, men do not experience this
for sure.
And studies show this, that men will have about 40 to 50% of the skills that an employer is looking for in somebody that they're hiring for a new job. And that man will walk into that job interview like he's the king of the mountain.
Yep.
a woman will have like 120% or like 99% of the skills that they've listed on their job application. And women either will not apply.
Yep.
Because they don't think they're good enough, or if they apply, they're almost kind of apologetic before they even get in the interview.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I tell women about, you know, the way not to have an imposter syndrome is to recognize that most of the men are the real imposters.
Ooh, I love
and
that.
And as a woman, particularly as a black woman, you should walk in the knowledge that you are likely twice as good as a lot of people around you because of what you've had to endure and overcome.
Mm-hmm.
Because your parents and family members have likely drilled into you from the time you were five that you had to be twice as good as anyone else.
Yep.
And if you were in STEM and got into an engineering, you know, or some science or a math degree program at a university or got a job at a tech company or science in a scientific endeavor, you've had that lesson drilled in you and you've built that attitude into your mindset.
Mm-hmm.
All through your college and early career. So you are always working harder, delivering more, doing twice as much just to get a shot.
Yep.
And so when you get that shot, you just, this is what I always did. I just like took my foot and slammed the door open. And like, I'm here and let me show you what I got.
Yeah. You're built for it.
Yeah, because I when I recognize that, you know, most of the time it's the men that are the imposters. They're very good at being hyper confident and acting like they run and own the universe. when you peel back the onion in my long 37-year career, most of the imposters I've run into have been men.
Yeah,
it is so true.
I was just on the phone with someone earlier and I was saying, you know, a lot of times men are supported by women and, you know, you help them, you know, whatever they're trying to do, whether it's a presentation or data, and then they get into the meeting and they're like, yeah, this is the data I came up with. It's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, you had help with that. And I love the part you talked about tough skin. I think that's so important. It's something that's hard to learn. It's almost like acquired over time. I think, you know, for me, I played sports with males my entire life until it got to a point where like, okay, I'm a female. I can, you know, do these things. I played soccer and I grew up having a tough skin because most of my family members and cousins and who I hung out with was males. But a lot of women don't have that experience or that environment. So it's hard to find what that tough skin. And to your point, not letting them see you sweat. Like, you have the power of your thoughts. You paint your own narrative. Like, you come into the room and you light up the room and you are confident and you lay in to what you know you are, what you're capable of, and what you bring to the table. And I think that's so, so important because so often it's like, oh, like, I don't know. And most of the time that you're 110% as a woman is really a man's 50%, right? And so you have, you are more than capable to do things than you think. And I'm obviously preaching to myself because I have to remind myself, like, I'm a pretty confident person, but I need that constant reminder and those people in your lives that actually help remind you as well. Because it's tough.
Yeah, you have to be your number one, your own number one advocate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because if you don't believe in you, why should anybody believe in you?
Exactly, exactly.
Right. So we've got to get over all that and build that tough skin,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and walk confidently in our skill set and knowledge. And I would say it's even more than your skill set and knowledge. It's having this sense that there's no obstacle that they can throw at me that I can't go over, under, or around.
Yes.
I'm resilient. I'm powerful. I'm smart. I'm an overcomer. I'm resilient and I have grit.
Mm-hmm.
And I can work my way through any situation, so I can, even if I don't have, you know, 100% of the skills they're looking for in this job, I know and have enough confidence in myself to know that I can close that gap quickly,
mm-hmm.
and I can network and build the resources and skills that I need to excel in this position.
Yeah.
And if you walk in that confidence, it's very attractive to managers and employers, because mm-hmm. they're looking for people that think that they can and are willing to do what it takes to be successful.
Yeah, so. For sure. Grit. I love that. That's what I always say. They're like, what's your strong suit? Like, what's your superpower? I'm like, it's grit. Like, I may know, mm-hmm. to your point, nothing at the beginning. I won't ever tell you that, but I really have no idea what it is. But I'm going to learn it. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to absorb like a sponge. And I think that's a huge skill that's not your normal, oh, you know, I have this technical skill or I have that skill or I know this person. But it's to your point, underestimated. But if you have grit, man, you can do anything.
There's
with
nothing
that.
You can't accomplish. Grit. That's like the number one muscle for a woman, particularly a black woman in this industry or any endeavor,
mm-hmm.
Where you're going to be underestimated to build is grit.
Yep.
Because I will take a person with grit over a person with all the credentials on a piece of paper any day of the week, and I've hired, you know, dozens and dozens of people.
For sure.
And that's usually what I'm looking for when I'm interviewing them. Do they have grit? Will they run at the first sign of trouble?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have perseverance to problem solve and figure their way around and through problems and obstacles?
Mm-hmm.
And you'd be amazed that not everybody's got it.
Yeah, no, I learned that the hard way. I was like, oh, isn't this normal? And I think earlier in my career, I had a male say to me, this is not normal. Like, how do you think like that? I was like, it's not normal. Like, no, like, you're analytical. You got grit. You work hard. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, let me, you know, lean into that a little bit more. And so mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, you mentioned you're currently retired. You're living your best life. I know you sit on the board of directors for the Association of Strategic Alliance Professionals currently and have been for almost the last 10 years. So super boss move to you. I aspire to be on a board one day. They may not want me on the board because I'm very outspoken, but I'm unapologetically outspoken. But, you know, growing up with the focus in STEM, did you ever see yourself being a member of a board? And if not, what led you to be an active participant on one today?
Well, I would say being on a board was not necessarily one of my life goals. It's not mm-hmm. something that I, you know, was interested in or kind of just wasn't in my wheelhouse of things that I was looking to aspire to.
Mm-hmm.
It just really happened organically because I'm someone who's always focused on personal and professional development. I'm always looking to pursue excellence and to improve my skills or expose myself to new things. And it's that passion that led me to get involved in my professional association, which is the Association of Strategic Alliance Professionals. I started out being an active volunteer. Then I started presenting at their global conferences. I became a sought-after presenter. And I was a part of a team that founded the local Research Triangle Park chapter of ASAP.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was asked to join the Global Board of Directors about 10 years ago, and I've just been giving back to my profession ever since then.
That's awesome. No, that's really, really cool. I love that you said it was an organic relationship and you got involved because it was something of interest at the time. It wasn't like, oh, I planned it. It just kind of happened. I think so often, especially as women, but definitely black women, it's like, okay, I have to plan out every step of my life. Like, this is what the 5 year is going to look like. This is what the 10 years is going to look like. And it always ends up not going as planned, but the plan always ends up better most of the time, or at least you grow in a different capacity or a different way. So that's really awesome.
That's why I think no, go ahead.
No, I was saying that's really awesome.
No, so I was going to say that's why to me it's always best to follow your passion and really be in tune with it. It's very easy to kind of get on a career mill, you know, particularly in a big company where there's an expectation that you do this and you do that and then you do this and kind of here's the career ladder, where you just kind of build some expectations in your head about what kind of job you're supposed to have.
Mm-hmm.
And You can certainly do that, but the problem with doing that is that you wind up 5 years later and you ask yourself, well, how did I end up here? Because it's not something that you really all that excited about. So when you find yourself, you know, getting lost in a project or losing track of time or being really energized by some project or opportunity that you're working on, you really need to pay attention to that, because that's your spirit telling you that this is something that resonates with you, this is something that is stirring up something in you and turning your lights on. And what you should be doing is chasing that, because if you chase passion, when you're passionate about something, then you're usually willing to do the extra stuff that it takes to be good at it or to excel at it. Versus if you're doing something that you're not passionate about, you're just kind of, it becomes more of a grind. So when you're passionate about something, that passion is infectious, and that passion translates itself into results in what you deliver. And, you know, delivering something that has your stamp on it. And good things happen when you follow your passion. So I always advise people to do that.
Yeah, Donna, it's like you're reading through my soul right now. I needed that. I know I'm empowering everyone else, but I needed that for me. That was good. It's life changing when that light bulb comes off and comes on, and you are in something that you know you're passionate about. It almost feels like not work. It feels like you were built and brought on this earth to do it. And, you know, I definitely encourage anyone that's listening, if you haven't found that, take some time to really reflect on what you're good at, what interests you, and even map it out. That's kind of what happened to me in business school. When I was getting my MBA, I had this class and I had this awesome professor, and she really challenged me to think about what I was really passionate about and really dig deep into what I was interested in, not just, you know, writing it out, but like mapping it out. And I was like, wow. And that's how I ended up pivoting into what I do now. And I was just like, I've been doing this all wrong, right? The plans I had, where I thought my career was going to go, it was all wrong. And it wasn't aligned to your point of where I needed to be, where I was good at. I mean, I was good at consulting, but I was really good at what I do now. And I'm just like, man, it's changed my life. It's changed the trajectory of so many other people's lives. And that's, you know, all the currency I ever need is impacting others. But that was really good. I'm so glad you said that, because so often in education and even in, you know, different roles or in companies, they don't tell you these things. You kind of have to learn it on your own.
Well, the sooner you find out what floats your boat, what gets you energized and excited to come into work every day, the sooner you find out what that is, the better and more fulfilled you're going to be in your career. Because a lot of people they go through the motions, particularly if you think about the way the educational system works. Like you're 17, 18 years old, and you have to pick a major.
You don't even know who you are.
The rest of your life. Like, you don't even know who the hell you are. And I, you know, stumbled on industrial engineering, and actually I got to my senior year and was worried that did I pick the wrong thing. But there happened to be one of the concentrations was in information systems. And luckily for me, that's what excited me, what I was interested in, the technology, and that's what kind of led me to my career in tech. And then once I got in tech, you know, specialized in strategic alliances and partnerships, because I was really excited about doing that kind of work. So the sooner you figure that out and you can start getting yourself on that path, the better off you're going to be, because you don't want to spend 20 years and then look up and go, I just spent 20 years doing stuff that has nothing to do with what brings me joy.
And doesn't serve you.
And it's very hard after 20 years of being invested in something to have the courage to change careers. People do it, but it's easier to change your path, you know, 5 years in or 6 years in than it is when you're 20 or 25 years in. So the sooner you identify, you know, what you're passionate about, the better
Yeah.
it is for your career.
No, I agree. And speaking of passion, and one of the things I'm really passionate about is encouraging more women and underrepresented minorities to pursue STEM. And so when you think about the partnerships you've built with leading technology and services firms and being in technology for years on years and years, in your opinion, overall, what do you think corporations and businesses could be doing to encourage more women and underrepresented minorities to pursue STEM? Where do they kind of have the upper hand to make a difference?
Well, I think they have to demonstrate seriousness of intent to really want to diversify their workforce and want to proactively recruit talent, which means you've got to be where that talent is, whether it's a school like North Carolina A&T that has a tremendous engineering program,
Awesome program.
or you have to have some feeder system, some way of identifying talent in college, getting ready to graduate from college to bring them into your company, or identifying them in the marketplace. And then most importantly, because some companies do a good job of getting the talent to come in, but they don't do a great job of nurturing the talent once it's in the door. And so you want to nurture the talent because particularly if you're black and you're female, you're going to potentially be the only one in your department, the only one in your branch office. I mean, I've been in jobs where I was the only one in the branch office that was black, or the only one in the branch office that was a black female. And it's very isolating, particularly if you're new, you're in a new job, a new company, you're learning all these new things, and then you have to kind of fight the feeling of isolation. So the best way to help employees deal with that isolation, to provide programs for networking and mentorship and providing safe places for them to talk and share their concerns and fears and to get advice in a safe environment. And that requires, investment, right? It's not just, so we're going to have like some perfunctory mentorship program and think that's going to get it done. It's got to be something that's real and that you're putting some investment in.
It's got to be
Because if you don't
authentic.
nurture the talent once they get there, then they don't stay.
Yeah, it's got to be authentic, and it's not, to your point, a short-term fix, right? It's a long-term, it's end game. It's not only do you meet the talent where they're at, whether it's geographically or what they're interested in, to try to get them piqued into the interest of the company, but it's also when you do get them, you got to keep them in. You have to connect them to people. You have to be able to show that there's a community there. And then I love the point that you mentioned of creating a safe space. I think with everything that's been going on, well, hasn't been going on recently, but it's been going on for a while, but has been awakened recently with the
Yeah,
racial
there we go. Corporations are woke now,
Yeah,
yes.
woke. Everyone's woke now. I think that presents an opportunity for companies and corporations and businesses to start creating those safe spaces where people can vocalize their feelings and their emotions and, even their ideas of how they can improve the group they're in, the company they're in, the team they're on. I think we have a lot of organizations have so many resources at their fingertips that are female or that are underrepresented minorities that they don't, tap on because they're not the VP or the manager or, at a certain level. But that doesn't mean they don't have good ideas and that they can't help with
Exactly.
facilitating the next steps to make this a comprehensive approach to this. And so, as we wrap up, you gave so many good gems, so I appreciate you. And as we wrap up our episode today, I want you to leave us with a word to the wise. I know you have so many words, they were all so great, but what would you like to leave to our community, our tribe, our technically female tribe, to leave them with some encouragement and some empowerment as they go through their STEM journey?
So I put a lot of thought into this because there's so many things that I could advise, but I think this one is the number one thing, which is your attitude determines your altitude. So if you adjust what's going on between your ears, it opens up so many possibilities and opportunities in your life, your personal life and your professional life. So when you look at every situation and you think about it in terms of how can I take this situation and turn it into an opportunity for me?
Mm.
How? What can I learn here? What skills can I build? That mindset will take you to places that aren't always the obvious choice,
mm-hmm.
and you can create an opportunity for yourself that others may miss because they don't have that mindset. And you should be always thinking about how can I be a linchpin in this organization, to be the person that this team cannot live without,
mm.
by taking on things that other people don't want to take on, yep. and adjusting my mindset to see opportunities that others might not see. And when I'm given lemons, how do I figure out how to turn this into lemonade? and by adjusting my attitude and creating an opportunity for myself. And I've done that time and time again in my career. When I adjusted my attitude about something or how I was looking at the job that I had or the assignment that I was given, it made all the difference in terms of the results,
mm-hmm.
that bad attitude generates bad results. Positive winning attitude generates positive winning results.
No, that's so good. I think if more people had an attitude check, they could be a lot further mm-hmm. in their career. Because it's not, to your point, always just the skills, but it's how your perspective, what you bring to the table, the energy you bring. I've been recently really big on energy and what energy is good, what energy is bad, and leaning towards the good energy. And I really love that you said your attitude determines your altitude. That's so big. That's a book, Donna. I know you're retired. That's a book.
I could probably write a book on that topic.
For sure. But I really appreciate you taking the time today to drop some gems for the Technically Female tribe in our community. And, I appreciate everyone that joined today to listen. Hopefully you were as filled by this conversation as I was. And we're looking forward to connecting with you same time next week, next Wednesday. And thanks, as always, for being a part of the tribe.